It's time for overtime.
Stop what you're doing and listen.
In the world of sports, it's all about the playmakers in today's headlines, from locals to the pros, with interviews from local standouts and sports all-stars across the country that will have you talking.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're here with the national champions.
Hear from coaches to players, sports analysts, and broadcasters who are a part of the action every day. Overtime, now with Burt Ramin on ESPN 102.3 AM 1000 KSOO, Sioux Falls sports leader.
Welcome back. It's hour number two on a Monday edition of Overtime. Still a lot ahead of us today on the show. Jackrabbit Football Talk head coach Dan Jackson. Jackrabbits did lose over the weekend to Montana. Their season coming to a close with a record of 9-5. And we will dive into Jackrabbit Football, the future, the immediacy, the portal, and more, including the story of the season, state of the program. Head coach Dan Jackson coming up here in about 30 minutes. Now, on the show, headlines and highlights, and after Coach Jackson, the good, the bad, and the ugly, and a lot of injury news to get to. A lot of bad, tough injuries yesterday in the NFL, particularly surrounding Colts quarterback Daniel Jones. Get the latest to that, latest on that news coming up at the end of today's show. Let's dive in to the scorecard, where yesterday in the NFL, nothing was predictable, nothing was vanilla, and certainly we got a lot of news to break down. Buffalo over Cincy, 39-34. Bengals looked like the better team for a lot of the game until they weren't. Bills get a statement win that probably says it all for the Bengals' season and their lack of defense. They're now 4-9, Buffalo 9-4. Minnesota Vikings got a big win after a big loss last week where they scored no points. They allowed 0 points yesterday to Washington, 31-0, the final. J.J. McCarthy, best game as a pro, 16 of 23, 3 touchdown passes and a big win for the Vikings. They are 5-8. The Colts lose in Jacksonville again, 36-19. Daniel Jones out for the season with an Achilles injury. Indianapolis now in dire straits to make the postseason. They're 8-5. We'll get to the latest postseason standings here in a moment, but Jacksonville in the driver's seat for now in the division with a record of 9-4 in Pittsburgh. How about Aaron Rodgers? Couple throws yesterday. Buddy and I that I had over said, wow, that looks like old school Aaron Rodgers, and it did. 27-22, the final. Pittsburgh a win when everything is falling apart, or at least we think in Pittsburgh. Steelers find a way to get it done. They're 7-6. Baltimore 6-7. And for those keeping score at home, Pittsburgh leads the division, and they are 3 full games better than Cincinnati right now. Denver over the Raiders, 24-17, probably the most predictable outcome of the weekend there. Packers, Bears, a lot of people thinking the Packers would find a way to get the job done, and that they did. The defense certainly bent and was dinged and dented throughout the game, but they didn't break at the end. A massive interception for Keyshawn Nixon, and it's all about the quarterback, according to Dan Orlovsky.
The reason why they win the football game is because the Packers have Jordan Love. He was exceptional. I mean, the ownership of the line of scrimmage, the information that he gets, the ways that he changes things, big-time throws down the field. You go early on in the one-on-one, Christian Watson changes the protection, gets it blocked up, and he drifts to find Christian Watson. Then the ball right before the half. This is exceptional to see that blown coverage, essentially, or you take advantage of it. The second thing is Christian Watson's become a number one. Yeah. And we could talk about Pickens being great this year. We could talk about Jackson Smith and Jigba, Puka. Christian Watson, ever since he's come back, he's become a number one wide receiver. I'm not putting him in that class just yet, but he's revolutionized their offense. Jordan Love, I said going Friday, I said Jordan Love's got a chance to play himself into the MVP conversation. Yes, Matthew Stafford and Drake May are at the top right now. Jordan Love, after this weekend, absolutely has played himself into the MVP conversation.
And again, into the MVP conversation. The front runners are still Matthew Stafford and Drake May, and they should be for now. But Love, if he continues to play well, Packers win the division. Forecasting that, we'll see. I think that Love deserves to be mentioned. The odds will get a little tighter, and they are moving quite a bit as of today. Get you the latest on that very topic later in the show. Dominic Foxworth, more praise for the Packers.
The Packers right now, because of Jordan Love and because of their aggressiveness down the field, and Jordan Love's ability to throw up his back foot and have that receiver where you can trust and throw it up, that team, to me, feels like they're at the top of the NFC. Feels like there are two teams, the Rams and the Packers. Forget the NFC, the whole NFL. They have separated themselves, in my eyes, eyes as like true teams that look like championship teams. There are other teams that might win it, but those are the only teams that when I turn on the TV, I'm like, man, they got the pass rushers, yeah. They got the defense, they got the quarterback, and they got playmakers at receiver.
Lot to like about the Packers. They're 9-3-1. Bears, certainly a nice performance. Not good enough in Green Bay, but I do think that game in a couple weeks going to be equally as entertaining. 28-21 the final. Chicago now 9-4. And last night, if you stayed up for it, Houston over Kansas City 20-10. The Texans are 8-5, playing really good football. The Chiefs are not. They're 6-7. Here's head coach Andy Reid on the mood of his team postgame.
They're upset. I mean, they put it all out there, and it didn't work out for them. The guys that had some mishaps there, they were upset. These guys take responsibility for things, so you keep going. But we put everything into these games, every game. So when you lose, you should be upset. And that's why you try to enjoy the wins when you have an opportunity. But there's a lot of time and effort that goes into it.
That's the Chiefs head coach, Andy Reid. Chiefs quarterback Patrick Mahomes on if he thinks his team's going to pack it in.
I think it's just who we are. Like, I mean, I know we're not winning games, but that mindset that these guys have in this locker room, in the games that we're not winning, you can never question the fight of this team. And obviously we're not executing at the right moments, and we're not making those plays. But at the end of the day, you'll never question that. And I think you'll see that for these last 4 weeks.
And again, the last 4 weeks, pretty crucial here for Kansas City. Yes, now this week, they absolutely have to win out to have a shot at the postseason. Probably don't control their own destiny. Going to depend on tonight's game between the Chargers and Eagles. Of course, Chiefs fans out there are going to be rooting for Philadelphia. Rest of the way for Kansas City, home to the Chargers, at the Titans, home to the Broncos, and at the Raiders. That's what it looks like the rest of the way for Kansas City. They need a lot more wins. Can they get it done? Damian Woody says no.
The dynasty is over. Yeah. It's been a hell of a run, but the Chiefs have been playing with fire now for about 2 or 3 years. They have. We've been in this studio countless times, talk about some of the Chiefs team. They don't look right. They've pulled out squeakers and all those type of things. And it's come to a head this year where guys aren't making plays. And plays that are there to be made, they're just not making them. They're not good enough.
They're not good enough. And that might just very well be the fact the rest of the way for Kansas City. Going to be awfully weird to be talking about the AFC playoff picture in the weeks to come without them in it. And then when we get to the postseason without seeing some nasty, cold, yucky weather in Arrowhead and Travis Kelce screaming into a microphone. Gonna be a little different this year, and a lot of fans are saying, good. I'm excited for the future without Kansas City for now in the playoff realm. Monday Night Football tonight, Eagles and Chargers. Big game for both teams in Los Angeles, 7:15 on ABC and ESPN. Philly favored by nearly a field goal. FCS playoffs over the weekend. How about USD? A 47-0 romp in Macon, Georgia over the Mercer Bears. LJ Phillips, too easy. 16 carries, 160 yards. Aiden Bauman, 2 touchdown passes, 47-0. USD moving on to face Montana, who handed SDSU a season-ending loss on Saturday, 50-29 the final. Closer than that game, SDSU definitely fought tooth and nail, had an early lead in that one, but Montana kept on punching, and SDSU falls 50-29. Final record for the Jackson 2025 is 9-5. We'll be talking with head coach Dan Jackson here to recap the season that was in about 20 minutes on today's show. University of North Dakota lost as well to Tarleton State, 31-13. Texans moving on to the quarterfinals. And then in an absolute stunner, of all the eventualities that we talk about in FCS college football, and there's a lot of people that are a little pessimistic when it comes to the FCS game and say, it's so top heavy. It's always Montana. It's always Montana State. It's always South Dakota State. It's always North Dakota State. You could argue, yeah, you know what? Those programs have carried the banner and carried the torch over the last decade plus in the subdivision. And you always think, okay, they're going to be there at the end. They whooped up on South Dakota State. They whooped up on South Dakota. The Bison are untouchable. They'll be there. Who are they going to play in the semi? Who are they going to play in the finale? Those are the questions. That's the water cooler talk, at least this year and generally in FCS college football. There's a couple teams that are out in front of the pack. And that's not always the case, but this year it felt like North Dakota State's year to win it, and they were the best team by a mile. Until they weren't on Saturday, and Illinois State got down early, was throwing pick after pick after pick after pick in an upset win for the Redbirds. By 1 point, 29-28, their quarterback Tommy Rittenhouse, who is fantastic normally, was off of his game. He threw 3 touchdown passes and 5 interceptions in an upset win, and a 23.5 point underdog wins inside the Fargo Dome. Nobody had that on their bingo card, but we can all celebrate, if you're a Bison hater out there, that NDSU is not going to be hoisting the trophy at the end of the year. Somebody else will, and we'll take a look at the latest odds and where USD is as the only Dakota school left standing. Congrats to Coach Johansson and the USD Coyotes, who will face off with Montana 2:30 on Saturday on ABC. The other 6 teams remaining in the FCS quarter: Stephen F. Austin visiting Montana State Friday night, Villanova at Tarleton State 11 o'clock a.m. Saturday, and Illinois State at UC Davis 4 o'clock on ESPN+. Plus, the season came to a close for Mankato on Saturday with a 52-29 loss at Ferris State. The Bulldogs moving on with a record of 14-0. And this weekend in college football, we got a couple of bowl games starting this weekend. We'll carry a pair of them here on ESPN Radio. Important note, though, on Saturday, Army-Navy. Don't miss that one. 2 o'clock on CBS. Navy is nearly a touchdown favorite in the game. And for our area teams that accepted bowl bids, Kansas State did not. Iowa State also chose to not accept a bowl, joining whiny Notre Dame today on a Monday. The area schedule for bowl teams, bowl games: Minnesota has earned a bid to the Rate Bowl. They'll match up with New Mexico, led by Coach Jason Eck, 3:30 on Friday, the 26th of December. Gophers favored by 3 initially. Iowa accepts a bid to the ReliaQuest Bowl. That's going to be a fun one to watch against Vanderbilt, 11 o'clock a.m. on New Year's Eve. And also that day, Nebraska and Utah in the Las Vegas Bowl. That is a 2:30 start time. Both those games on ESPN. Well, the 11-seeded South Dakota Coyotes dominated from start to finish in the program's first ever FCS playoff shutout with a 47-0 victory over the 6th-seeded Mercer Bears. Saturday afternoon, from a rain-filled day at Five Star Stadium in Macon, Georgia, USD advanced to the FCS quarters for the 3rd straight season behind a pair of 100-yard rushers and 100-yard receivers and 500-plus yards of total offense. Wide receiver Lorenzo Fenner broke the program's single season record for touchdown catches with 15 on the year. And on that same play, quarterback Aiden Bauman became the South Dakota career leader for passing yards and the first Yote with 9,000 in a career, also moving into second place for career TD passes. It was a massive win for USD, a tough loss for SDSU. Montana quarterback Kiali Ayotte threw for 360 yards and 4 scores to lead the Grizz past the Jackrabbits 50-29 in the second round of the FCS subdivision playoffs. Montana 12-1, Jackrabbits 9-5, year number 1 under Coach Dan Jackson, who we'll hear from here in about 15 minutes. That's the latest on college football for now. Rewind here quickly to some CFP chatter, opinion, and lunacy, in my opinion. Notre Dame out to the college football playoff field, and I'll say this candidly again, as I did in hour number 1. Did the committee get it right? That's up for debate. My opinion, Notre Dame better than Miami today. Better than Miami throughout the majority of the season when they met in week 1 at Miami. Canes won by 3. So, is it apples to apples? No. Notre Dame has 2 ranked losses, one of which on the road. And then you've got Miami with 2 unranked losses, and they didn't even play for their conference title in a really bad, really bad ACC this year in terms of generally what you get out of the ACC is Clemson or Florida State or somebody else up there playing for big time games in December. We did not have that this year. We had Virginia and Duke in an upset win the ACC with 5 losses this year. Miami couldn't represent the ACC in Charlotte this weekend. They were idle. My biggest problem, though, with the narrative around Notre Dame, and yes, they're whining because whoever gets left out is going to whine, and Notre Dame has a lot of wine and cheese and fans in this country. And they're going to whine about it, and they got a loud fan base, and that's fine. Should they be miffed? Yes. because of the way that the committee approached things. They said, yeah, you're in. You're in. You keep winning, you're going to get into this thing. No doubt about it. You're better than Miami right now. Yeah, we got you ahead of them in the rankings. And then we saw some criticism pour in. And maybe a change of heart or two or three from the committee members. And then Miami got closer and closer. And then this week, with no new information, we just decide, okay, yep, Miami over Notre Dame. That's our decision. It just feels inauthentic to me, inconsistent to me, and I have no problem if you value head-to-head that much, put Miami over Notre Dame immediately, eminently from the outset of the CFP rankings. But to do it in the very last moment in what felt like a drama play, but in addition to that, just felt like a change of heart more than anything. I got a big problem with the way they approached it. Notre Dame, for me, opinion 100% included, and I realize it's just an opinion, I think Notre Dame's a better team. I think Notre Dame can win a national title. I do not think Miami is capable of doing that. So Notre Dame would have been in for me, and I understand that it's not the same opinion. But if you have the head-to-head so high now, where was it a couple of weeks ago, 3-4 weeks ago, when we saw Miami with a much bigger number than Notre Dame? It just doesn't add up to me, and a lot is inconsistent, but you'll be surprised of the narrative now from a couple talking heads in college football about more exclusion coming down the pike for the CFP.
Who wants to watch those games? And we already watched one of them. I think that this is getting an extra spotlight because JMU is in it. But if it was just Tulane, they already got beat by Ole Miss 45-10. We've seen that football game. I love the comparison to the basketball March Madness, because I actually feel that having these group of five, group of six teams with a chance to compete for a national championship is good for the fabric of the NCAA, of football, of college football. But that would be the equivalent of saying, we're going to add 2 16 teams, but we're going to take out 2 number 3 ranked teams in the March Madness.
Yeah.
You can't do that. They need to expand the playoffs, but they also need to change the metrics to which those teams are allowed to get in. Can't be just top 25. If you're top 15 or top 10 or top 16, if that's the number of playoff, then maybe you can have that consideration. But we can't be doing a make-a-wish program with the college football playoffs and just adding teams because we feel like they should deserve it.
That's Jordan Rodgers of ESPN. I don't think it's much of a make-a-wish deal here as much as the rules that you and the powers that be and the big conferences and the big money and the big coffers have made. It's not the small school's fault that your big schools stink. The ACC was a no-show this year across college football for the most part, save Miami. And that is the fault of these smaller schools for having a really good resume. I don't care about if they lost to Ole Miss last week. If they have the resume and they're in there based on how you constructed it in this world that is owned by the Power Four, it used to be the Power Five, and then they decided to exclude those two schools and teams as well. I don't understand what else you want the little guys to do. And I'll say it again, pie in the sky, pie in the sky. I get that. Burt's dream scenario for college football, let's go ahead and say it and call it what it is. No Tulane, no Kennesaw State, no Marshall, no Toledo, no Central Michigan, nobody like that. A group of six, no Washington State, no Oregon State. None of those schools are going to win a national championship, and very few of them will be invited to participate to win 3 or 4 games in a row against premier competition in order to get to a national championship. It's not currently constructed for them to win it because of the massive, massive differences financially and so much more from a Toledo or a Bowling Green up to even a Vandy or a University of Tennessee or Indiana. That is a big gap. But the gap from the top, and we're talking Georgia, Bama, Ohio State, Florida, those big blue blood programs are playing the exact same sport, playing for the exact same title as New Mexico State or New Mexico or UNLV or Boise State or Utah State or any of these small schools. So yes, pie in the sky for me. How do you fix it, Bert? So we can't stop having these conversations in the near term future. Is maybe it's time that we start talking about expansion of the CFP and adoption of a new model, new championship for these group of six schools. There are almost 100 programs in these group of six conferences that more than likely, even if they have a 100-year roster, unbelievable playmakers come in, the right coach, the right time, this is the team of destiny, they got to go through 3 to 4 really darn good FBS programs with $1 zillion and 1 zillion fans and the college football playoffs slanted towards them. I think it's time for a middle division playoff, middle division natty. And if you're good enough to get an invite from the big division, you want to take it to go and try to win the creme de la creme top of college football national title, you can do that. But for all of these fan bases and big, medium, small markets from Tulane down there in New Orleans to cities the size of Des Moines or cities the size of, I don't know, Davenport, Iowa, big cities with big fan bases, passionate people, you're not playing the same sport as Georgia. You're not playing the same sport as Bama or Ohio State. You're playing for the same trophy, but you can't get your hands on it, and there's a lot of opinions here. Here's Paul Feinbaum echoing what Rodgers has to say about excluding the little guy moving forward.
They do not belong. I'll save you the, with all due respect, nonsensical preamble that we always use, Greeny. There's no reason to have schools like that in a playoff when you're leaving home Notre Dame and BYU and Texas and Vanderbilt. But this is like Washington politics. They made a deal. The commissioners blocked an initial idea to make this thing a couple of years ago. So the top commissioners made a deal to have this thing last year, and they had to let these guys in. Now it's wrong, but it's politics, and it's the way college athletics works, unfortunately.
You know, it's interesting when you talk about all these other conferences and the 100 schools, roughly, that are in this group of six that are saying, how can we carve out a small piece of the pie so we could possibly maybe, please, 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 can I have some more, get a seat at the table? And the auto bids and the highest ranked conference champion that's from a fifth conference. That's great. That's all well and good. And Paul Feinbaum saying, oh, the structure and what they agreed to and this and that. It's not their fault that your big guys stunk this year in the ACC. And also in addition to that, last time I checked, the Big Ten and the SEC in particular are always clamoring for more guarantees and a bigger slice of the pie. So pardon me. If you have a massive piece of the pie in terms of revenue and viewership and fandom in this country that is completely and totally underrepresented, and you got people like that saying they don't belong every single year. Crazy stuff, really weird world we're living in the world of the college football playoff. And yes, it's time, I think, to start having conversations about a middle division and a middle division national championship so we can celebrate the UCFs, the Cincinnatis, the App States, I hope, and more that are that darn good and playing in a realistic championship scenario in the same sport. Let's continue now with your ReliaBank headlines of the day. Augustana hockey over the weekend tied Bemidji State on Sunday after a weather-impacted delay on Saturday. They moved the game till yesterday, and it was a 4-4 tie, overtime loss technically for Augie. They fall to 8-5-2. They'll be in action against Mankato Friday at 7, Saturday at 6. I do have tickets as well to give away later on this week on the show. In a double overtime thriller down South Summit Avenue, the Augustana Viking men's basketball team outlasted Sioux Falls 108-106 on Saturday afternoon inside the Stewart Center. The Vikings now 5-3, held the Cougars now 2-6 to 44% from the field and outscored USF 18-7 on the fast break and 52-40 in the paint. Tamron Ferguson powered the Viking offense with 28 points, 7 assists, and 4 boards. Augustana Vikings, the winner in the first iteration of the city rivalry this year. Double overtime, 108-106 on the men's side. And then you missed it also on the women's side. Augie women's basketball showed fight down the stretch, but the Cougars got a 10-point win, 76-66 for Augie. They're 3-5, 0-3 in conference. They traded punches early. Isabella Sine led Augustana with 20 points and 11 rebounds, but the Vikings could not hang with USF late. 76-66 the final. Augie returns to the court on Thursday as they hit the road to take on St. Cloud State, a 7:30 start time. Those are your ReliaBank headlines of the day for hour number two. When we come back, very much looking forward to our final conversation of the year. with head coach Dan Jackson. The Jackrabbits lose to Montana on Saturday. Lopsided on the scoreboard a bit, but if you watch the game, you know it was a lot closer than that and a tremendous amount of fight for the Jackrabbits. 50-29, the final score. Coach Dan Jackson helps us make some ones and twos of the ball game and some takeaways of the season. We'll also get into offseason priorities, how he and the staff in Brookings are approaching the transfer portal, and more. That's coming up next on a Monday edition of Overtime.
The best sporting matchups and coverage. We are ESPN 102.3 and AM 1000 KSOO, Sioux Falls sports leader.
Right back with you on this Monday, December 8th edition of Overtime. Well, we did have a season come to a conclusion for the Jackrabbit football team on Saturday out in Missoula, fighting tooth and nail with the Grizzlies. A 9-5 finish in 2025 for first year, now second year head coach Dan Jackson, who joins us and has joined us preseason, in season, over the bye weeks and more. Coach, thanks again for all the time you've poured into us and the show and the program this year. It's been a blast to have you. I know a disappointing end, no matter when it comes, if it does come, winning a natty or not. Obviously, a lot of hard work, blood, sweat, and tears poured into each and every college football season. How you guys doing this week, all things considered?
No, I think anytime the season ends, it's tough. There's some unique emotions there because you put so much into it as players and coaches, and then you got to completely shift your schedule and things that you're getting done. It's a lot different than game planning and kind of being in that mode. So we're shifting our gears to two things. First, honoring our seniors and our players that put so much into this season and allowing them an opportunity to go out the right way and get what we need from them that we can help them in the future, get jobs, NFL, make sure that they're on the right path. And then the team that's here is really focused on next season already. I mean, there was like 8 or 9 guys in my office yesterday that are some of our best players and best leaders that are coming back that we're just going through a lot of different things. So team meeting tonight, really, really focused on them finishing finals strong as well. Still a student athlete at South Dakota State, at least. And so that matters to me. And now we'll get going on how can we be better? How can we get bigger, faster, stronger? How can we keep more guys healthy? How can we be better coaches? Tweaking things and adjusting scheme. I mean, there's not a vacation, I guess, what you're asking. We'll take some time to enjoy the holidays, but, I'm really motivated and rejuvenated about the future.
Tough loss at Montana to conclude the season. Coach, as you look back at that, the X's and O's perspective, game flow, what do you have to say about just the game itself, how it went? Obviously didn't end in your favor, but you guys showed a lot of fight down the stretch. Great start to the game. What do you think really added up to the season-ending loss for your team?
Yeah, I mean, I think you see the belief in what we were doing and how we could play early in the game. I thought there's an opportunity to open up a 3-score lead, but we didn't get the stops we needed defensively. A lot of that was allowing the quarterback to be in rhythm too much, not being tight enough in coverage. They obviously had good players that made plays. We weren't able to tackle well enough. I mean, things need to get better there. And then offensively, we just couldn't get the run game going. We got behind the sticks too many times with false start penalty or like a substitution. I mean, things we needed to be better on first down on offense to not be in obvious passing situations. And then I think, at some point it became too much of chase in the pass game and needing to kind of get one-dimensional on that side, which – I thought the quarterbacks received, I thought they played hard of what you saw once we did lose a lead and get 2 or 3 scores down that we fought back there. But we needed to do some things that were risky and onside kicks and things that, you don't want to get into. So we play our best game in all three phases. There's no doubt we can win that game. We didn't. We got to coach better. There's just, they're a good team and the environment as well just caused some of the problems with the false starting and things of that nature. So, but we need to get better.
Coach, obviously a long offseason ahead for you in the program. We'll dive into some priorities and kind of the way that you and the staff are going to attack the offseason. When you talk about the guys within the program, there was a big long video post-game locker room about the seniors, the message to your team. South Dakota State's not going anywhere. We're a championship caliber program. I'm paraphrasing your words. What did you make of the overall demeanor of the guys in defeat? It's always tough, a lot of emotions, and also just the state of the program heading into 2026. You got to feel pretty darn good about things.
Yeah, the locker rooms after, I mean, one team wins it all, you know, and everybody is going to go through that same locker room feeling that's not that team. So I thought the guys, you know, they're disappointed and they're upset and they're emotional because you put a lot into it. I'd be really concerned if they weren't hurt by losing and, you know, like in the playoffs. And so, you know, I think first and foremost, you know, it's honoring the seniors as we have and taking care of those guys. And then how do we move forward in the overall trajectory of the program? I mean, our best players that are underclassmen are coming back. And so, you know, people don't, I understand the transfer portal and there'll be a guy here and a guy there, but we built a great foundation with last year's freshman class. We just signed what I think is going to end up being the best freshman class ever at South Dakota State. And so you got that. And a lot of our leaders and best playmakers are already committed to me that they're coming back. And so, you know, and they've been offered a lot of money and tampered with and those things, and they're committed to coming back. And then I think it's an opportunity for us to retool the roster after 1 year of, you know, who can help you, who do you need to help find another home too? The transfer portal isn't all bad. I mean, I think there's, you know, you'll see some guys that probably go in that's not an indictment on our program. That's us helping them try to find a best spot for them to accomplish their goals. So, you know, yeah, and I think we'll add 6 to 8 players from the transfer portal that fit our program. That now that I've had the time to recruit and evaluate and see where our needs are, they'll be at positions and needs, and there'll be guys that fit our program. So really excited about that. And off season we'll be training and getting better at football and football 101. I mean, I could talk to you for 2 hours. I got the next 12 months planned out already.
Mm-hmm. Certainly a lot ahead. Jackrabbit football season wrap up conversation underway. Head coach Dan Jackson finishing up year 1, year 2. Already underway for the Jackrabbits here heading into 2026. Coach, you dove in a bit there on transfer portal philosophy. I wanted to see if you'll give us anything else about that in terms of the outgoing guys and the possible incoming guys. How do you and the staff view the portal? You mentioned there's positives in it as well. I really am getting at this because of the Luke Womack post earlier on today, him saying he's going to enter the portal and you immediately going after and saying, you know what, we're here to help you find a new home. You kind of take responsibility for your guys, because after all, they're a member of your program. Your job is to help them grow by any means necessary. Sometimes in the sport, it gets pretty ugly, Coach, and you know that. People yeah. put their name in the transfer portal, and you say, okay, never talking to you again. Best of luck. Thanks for all your work. I'm moving on to somebody else or the bigger fish in the portal. How do you and the staff view the portal, incoming, outgoing portal, and how aggressive will you be in the years to come in bringing new players in from the portal?
Yeah, I think first, any of our players that are outgoing, I think your ability to connect and have a relationship and an understanding and communicate effectively with them throughout the year, you're not surprised by that. And honestly, the portal goes both ways. I mean, in Luke's case, I mean, Luke's a freshman. He's a long ways from home. We have the most talented receiving core in the FCS coming back next year. You know, his goals and things that he wants to accomplish right now, I got to help him do that, you know, and so sometimes it is helping him and being there for those guys. And you'll see a couple other guys go in here soon too. And I'm going to help them because I care about the person more than the player. I want to help them find a place that they can go have success and fit. And I think when people see a player leave, they think that they're disgruntled. I will tell you that that's 90% of the time in our program, that's not going to be the case. I mean, they're going to be grateful and thankful for the opportunity they were given, and they know and we know that there's a better situation for them to reach their goal. So I expect little to none, you know, little. I expect very little attrition on our team of players outgoing, of guys that had played a lot that, you know, are guys that I wouldn't have expected or guys that I already haven't had those discussions with. And we're going to be here to help them. And I'm also never going to, if a guy gets offered $3 million and that's something they need to do for their family, I get it. But I'll tell you, we have guys offered a lot of money that are staying. Now everybody's situation's different. And then how do we approach it? I'm going to look for guys that have been productive. I don't really care the level. I actually think the lower level guys moving up is something that we need to take advantage of. A great player to Division II school or an NAIA school or Division III school can come in and be a great player here. We've seen that. It's not just about the biggest school that I don't care so much. I mean, Alex Bullock was a great player this year, not because he came from Nebraska, but because we knew what type of person he was. Mm-hmm. And so we're going to be really focused on guys that want to move up levels, and we'll only take guys from higher levels that we know and have a relationship with. So, you know, I hope to be majority high school and be able to add 6 to 8 guys a year.
Love that, Coach. Appreciate the candor, as always, that you've given us all year long. Before we cut you loose for the offseason, 9-5 finish, give us the state of the program speech, Coach, and maybe an offseason priority or two. You told us bigger, stronger, faster. That goes without saying, knowing that program up in Brookings. What else is on the priority list? And just a spiel on the current state of affairs up there in Brookings for Jackrabbit football.
Yeah, on the current state first, our players know that what we have returning, they know what's in front of us as long as we put in the work. The goal is to win a national championship next year. I think we have depth at a ton of positions. We've got to attack these next phases. I break the year down into phases, and, you know, state of the program in phase one is to get your body in the best possible shape that it can, and then learn football we're going to go back and do football 101s and start from the ground up and, you know, get a chance to teach them things that we may not have had the time to do last year during an off season. And so it's going to be breaking the game down in a very simple form for them and building it back up. And the summer will be about refining and continuing to stay in shape, but refining those things and expanding on more of the details football-wise. And then during the season, we'll be able to execute the work we put in. So I think the feel and the morale and the energy behind the team hasn't been higher. The belief and the excitement within the team is at all time high, and there's guys ready to make a move. So really excited about that. And then I think that answers a little bit of your mm-hmm. questions on next steps for us too. I'm excited for them to get a little bit of time with their families and away from football at the same time to come back in January. So they'll start January 12th. The off-season program will be a combination of lifting, running, conditioning, as well as mental performance and strength that way. And then just really tearing down all of our, and as coaches that during that time, we're going to tear everything down to the studs, which I think you need to do every year and build it back. And we need to create identity within our offense. Now that we know the personnel and the players and the coaches have a better chance to be on the same page, we'll do the same thing on defense. So won't be drastic schematic changes, but we're going to be focused on running the football, being creative that way. You know, creating shots down the field defensively. We're going to adjust and change some things just as offenses adapt and special teams. We need to grow as well. So I'm looking forward to the offseason, being able to have a chance to really mentor and push and grow the coaches as much as I am the players.
Great stuff ahead for Jackrabbit football, no doubt about it. 9-5, the record in 2025. Coach Dan Jackson, our guest for the final time in season, now into the offseason. Coach, it's been a blast to get to know you week over week this year on the show. Excited to have you on next year as well. Thanks so much for all the time you've poured into us and given to your fans this year. We really appreciate it and excited to continue to cover the team moving forward. Thanks again, Coach.
Thanks, Bert. Have a great you know, rest of the week and then holiday season too, buddy.
We absolutely will. You as well. Head coach Dan Jackson, South Dakota State Jackrabbit football. And again, all of our coaches, our Big Four coaches, are always so gracious with the time. And it includes even bye weeks, preseason, questions I might have during the week, on the off season. Coach Dan Jackson, a lot of time poured in to the program and to the fans out there. Tremendous support week over week, year over year. Jackrabbits 9-5, the finish in 2025. That is head coach Dan Jackson on a Monday. Got to feel great, by the way, about the state of affairs, things to come for Jackrabbit football. They will be aggressive. They will bring in some folks, and they'll lose some people in the portal too, but that is a very inspiring sign. Coach Dan Jackson, so honest about the portal, helping the young men, and in addition to that, their philosophy. We're not going to just go after big school guys that are ticked off with immense talent looking to get on the football field, but we're also going to look over NAIA, D2, D3 guys that are good football players and good people. Got to be inspired about that for you Jackrabbit fans here on a Monday. Coach Dan Jackson then coming up next. Dings and dents, the good, the bad, and the ugly. As we say so long to a Monday edition of Overtime next on ESPN 102.3 AM 1000 KSOO.
Streaming live online and with the app, this is Overtime with Burt Ramin on ESPN 102.3 and AM 1000 KSOO, Sioux Falls sports leader.
Right back with you, set to round out and wrap up a snowy, yucky, cold, nasty, not sunny Monday edition of Overtime. Burt Ramin back here with you in the studio seat. Let's dive right in. The good, the bad, and the ugly up to bat first here on a Monday. Lot to get to, including some baseball talk right away. Let's hit it. It's the good, the bad, and the ugly.
Many days there are those who can be called a problem child. You know the ones. They have a tendency to display an ugly side. They have their whiny moments. Some display an outright bad side of themselves. And then there are those who stand out in a good way. Well, here they are. The good, the bad, and the ugly.
All right, we start the good, the bad, and the ugly with some good news out of Major League Baseball. That is that 57-year-old Jeff Kent, who holds the record for home runs by a second baseman, was elected to the National Baseball Hall of Fame on Sunday. The 57-year-old was named on 14 of 16 ballots by the Contemporary Baseball Era Committee, two more than he needed for induction. Just as noteworthy as Kent's selection were the names who didn't earn enough support, which included all-time home runs leader with an asterisk, Barry Bonds, 354 game winner Roger Clemens, two MVPs from the 1980s, Don Mattingly and Dale Murphy, and Gary Sheffield, who hit 509 career homers. Jeff Kent, 57-year-old, will get in to the Baseball Hall of Fame. On to the bad news and the ugly news. Well, I'm going to dive right into bad and ugly, and that is Notre Dame Athletic Director Pete Bavakwa, who unloaded on the ACC in the wake of Sunday's college football playoff snub, saying that the conference that houses almost every Fighting Irish sports team has caused permanent damage to the relationship. Bavakwa told the Dan Patrick Show today that he has great respect for Miami, Bama, and all the teams that stated their cases for CFP inclusion. But here's what he had to say in regards to the ACC. We were mystified by the actions of the conference to attack their biggest partner in football and a member of their conference in 24 of our other sports. They have certainly done permanent damage to the relationship between the conference and Notre Dame. Last month, the ACC's official account posted a side-by-side comparison of the two programs. No hypotheticals, just facts, was the ACC post. Hard to blame the ACC for going to bat because they get bonuses and boosts by getting teams in. Were they deserving? You know my opinion well on that. I thought Notre Dame today is the better team. And the losses are so much better for Notre Dame, but you also look at wins. Miami probably had the better wins resume similar, but I would say Notre Dame in, Miami out. And my biggest issue in all of it is just the way that the CFP committee handled things and the way that they had Notre Dame ahead of Miami every single week in the poll until it was time for the selection show where they turned coat and went the other way and went with Miami. And is that a absolute horrific decision? No, they're comparable schools. Are they very comparable? Probably not. Notre Dame, I think, has the better resume, weaker schedule, weaker opponents, weaker strength of victory. I understand that. But the issue is, in me, to me, is the way they went about the entire scenario. That's it. Now for Notre Dame. Lastly, ugly, ugly news in terms of dings and dents. Daniel Jones has a torn Achilles tendon and wide receiver Alex Pierce saying it is brutal. That's our team leader, our team captain. Jones going to be out the rest of this year and further on than that. Really tough injury news there out of Indianapolis. And one final ugly slash good slash something to bring a smile to your face here as we call it a show on a Monday. The good, the bad, and the ugly. Join us tomorrow on the program. But interesting news item. on Saturday watching college football with my son, who's not the biggest football fan yet. Hope he grows into one. But I always ask him, all right, Patrick, who's playing? He'll say, oh, Dad, that's the Dolphins against the orange helmet. Oh, it's the Browns, son. How does that make sense? It doesn't. They just stink. Just know that. But he'll identify the logos and has gotten pretty good at the NFL logos. College game, not so much. So we're watching the Jacks game on Saturday. And I say, all right, Patrick, who's playing? He says, oh, the Jackrabbits, of course. Great branding by SDSU. Great logo. And he says, the soda for Montana. And I start laughing because if you look at the grizz and the cursive, it does look like the side of a Coke can or a Dr. Pepper can. So in this world we're in right now, South Dakota against Montana, South Dakota State against Montana last week, let's pour in and beat up on the soda can Montana Grizzlies this weekend. That's the show. Thanks for listening as always. Overtime on a Monday.